How are you?
Let's pretend we haven't had a chat for the last hour.
I mean, this is the thing. This is like the conceit of all podcasts, though, right? Is that they start and go, "Yeah, how are you?" Let's just ignore the fact that we didn't, although we haven't been talking, as you say, for the last like hour. Although we have now reached the point where today we were having a conversation. We were like started to talk about some stuff. We're like, no, this we cannot yet spoil this conversation. This has to be recorded.
The sanctity of it needs to be saved for the actual recording.
Absolutely. We are going to talk about Dub Dub in this WWDC. Which so
Why is
I
it
guess
dubbed
I
up?
should.
Hold on. Why is it dubbed up?
I'm going to blame Nilay Patel from The Verge. He just calls it Dub Dub because he's like, rather than going WWDC because it's
Hold on. How
W
are you
Dub.
say? Why are you saying it so strangely? Say
Saying what so strangely?
the letter again, like the beginning, like the first letter.
It's WW. It's WWDC, but like the it's
You just say WWDC. You don't have to
yeah,
over
but
you. I think
I
the dub dub is
think
ruining your W.
well, I think some of it also is it's if you understand that it was I think I don't the etymology is confused, but maybe it's also to do with George W because it's an Americanism
Oh, right.
W that yeah.
Yeah.
But you
No,
know
I just call it WWDC. Like, I just to me,
yeah
it's like a sound all together. There is no letters in there.
I
It's just the sound that comes out. Just WWDC. But yes, let's talk about WWDC. I don't think we actually planned it, but in reality, we did like watch it together.
yeah we did we kind of although I was thinking as we were kind of watching it together, oh we should be recording this, and I was like no because this would just be unusable.
No. Yeah, no, absolutely. The amount of screaming that would come from my end, it would be. No, in all honesty, there were some moments, and we'll get to them, where I audibly, sitting by myself in my little sister's bedroom, I audibly gasped. Just like, oh, you know, Apple have done their Apple thing, which they have absolutely just.
There was some things, yeah. There were some things that I read that were leaked or very, very heavily rumored. But then there was a couple of things that I was like, oh no, okay, that's, yeah, no, okay, that's cool. One of which is voice isolation on calls, which seems really in the context of, and by the time this is coming out. There's probably going to be a whole lot more detail around everything we should say. We're kind of reacting to the keynote and not much else. But as soon as they were like, you can be in a busy situation on a phone call and it will cut out the background noise. And I was like, yeah, no, this is a game changer for me. Forget everything else.
Can
Just make
we
that
also
little thing easier.
just state a couple of things for the a lot of the things that we're excited about in the Apple ecosystem have already been done. It's nothing new. And I hate having this conversation about like, oh, you know, especially like one of the big things and like the two key words I took away from that entire from the entire session was customization and personalization. And I could already hear, you know, folks using Android calling me, going like, but this is the we've always had this. So, you know, kudos to you for finally catching up. Apple do things slowly and then they do it right. I think that is the biggest thing. That was my biggest takeaway from this entire event.
Oh, Android had it first, yeah, but Apple did it better. And I'm gonna just say, full disclaimer now, this will be an Apple love-in, so if you're not here for that, then we'll put a timestamp in the show notes and you can skip ahead to the main section of the podcast, which we'll come to. But for the next however many minutes, this will be Paul and Lydia talk about how great Apple is.
No,
Just to say
hold
that.
on. Not how great Apple the company is. How cool the stuff that they've announced are. Let me
Right,
make that
yes,
very clear.
okay.
Caveat,
Yes.
caveat, caveat. It's important.
Caveat, caveat, caveat. How great the announcements at Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference in their keynote were yesterday, and why they've just done things that we go, but we've wanted that for ages, and we're so happy that you've finally done it. But if it is half as good as they made it look, it's going to be game changing. And if it as is as good as they made it look, it's just like, okay, I'm never leaving this ecosystem. Take all my money. It's take my shut up and take my money.
Yeah, just take my home.
I get it.
The house, yeah. The car, the dog,
yeah,
everything.
That's it. Just take... Tim, get off the roof.
To be honest, that was my first when I saw the first of all, just the beginning of it. I was just like, oh my goodness, okay, here we go. Let's make flying cool again. That's been a thing, like all year round. And then seeing Tim on the roof, the only thing I could think of is just like, get this man off the roof. He's worth billions and billions of dollars. Please don't leave him there.
For context, if you, I would suggest go and watch the, like, and we'll link to a highlights reel of this for context. But yeah, Tim Cook, the literal CEO of Apple, spent most of the keynote stood on a roof, and I was like, just don't fall off. And the opening was also, I will admit that I was Googling last night going, is the whole can you play 30 seconds of a song in a podcast thing true? No, it's not. And because we don't want to get sued, we won't be playing Kickstart My Heart by Motley Crue. But for a band that are firmly mediocre, they have like one or two good songs. And it was just, it opened and I just kind of went, okay, very good. You're doing this. And the parachute opening with the throwback rainbow color for the classic Apple colors, and having the Vision OS and iPad OS and TV OS just on. I was like, okay, that's very well produced.
I do wonder, and especially post the blunder they did with the iPad announcement, I wonder how much of this whole thing was changed based on that. Because it suddenly felt like where you had on one extreme, it's like, oh yeah, we'll just crush creativity for the sake of this one thin layer of the metal. And then suddenly you have this almost magical tapping into people's desire for like what used to be really cool. And especially when I saw the iPod, I was like, that is definitely something that they couldn't have added that recently, that was already the plan. But I'm just like, this is such a good attempt to save face post that traumatic event that they had.
The banter timeline on this, the true banter, and I agree. And I also, I did a little squeal when I saw the iPad. Not the iPad, the iPod. I was like, I remember when those were new, and I'm very old. But also, that's cool. The banter timeline is that they knew that there was going to be outrage at the Crush ad, that they did it deliberately, that the whole, oh, this isn't the banter timeline, right? I don't seriously think this, but for the laugh, let's imagine that it's the Galaxy Brain version of this, right? Hey, let's really do something that's going to offend a bunch of people, because you know what? We're going to make them feel super nostalgic when we do our keynote, and they'll forgive everything.
Yep. Let's offend the majority of our audience, which is creatives, and then give them an iPod. Yep, okay, cool. Cool beans. Yeah. Can I just admit to something to you, Paul? I think my deal with the devil worked, because my shout at the last episode, at the very end, did in fact come through.
It did.
We got good Siri. We got good Siri.
We might be getting good Siri. Yes.
Yep. Well, I think any Siri than the current one is going to be better, and it's going to be then good, because current Siri is useless.
This is true. And I think they said something like, there's 1.5 billion requests to Siri. I don't know how frequently, maybe every day, maybe every year, to which my response was, and 1.49 billion are people setting timers. And the remainder are, here's the thing I found on the internet about setting a timer, and which prompts people to go, no Siri, set a timer.
Siri.
Bad Siri. I think in summary, well, a couple of things as well on the keynote. First of all, they are both masters at the art of like solutions demos, but they broke all the rules, and they showed you all the stuff that you don't care about early on. Opening with Vision OS felt very much like, we know that this is overpriced, and yeah, it's going to come to some more markets, but we know that you're all waiting for us to do the stuff that you all know we're going to do. So we're going to make you watch this stuff first so you don't miss that.
This is my about why I hate when people showcase Apple as a good example of how to present stuff. Apple can get away with this because you have 50 to 100,000 eyes glued on the screen waiting for them to get to the point where people want to. And they know they'll have people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
We in pre-sales don't have that luxury. Unless you work for Apple. But your normal day-to-day, whatever software you're selling, we can't do that. So yes, whilst they did break all of the rules, and also like it's at one point, like I know it's to you that I just, oh, come on. Like they literally did the menu approach where they said, like, we're going to talk you through this and this and this, like the three items. The first one was the features. And I'm like, right? Like, we shouldn't be. Oh, this is, again, you're breaking all the rules. But again, Apple can afford it. And secondly, to that point, it is a developer conference, right? And whilst obviously all of us, you know, fangirls are also looking at this, in reality, it is about the people whose main objective is to understand the actual numbers and feature and the actual outcome and the benefits later. Because to them, they will create a lot of the benefits, mm-hmm. because there are people who do create apps that do create, you know, products already in the Apple ecosystem. But again, even then, I was just like, just start with what's in it for me, right? If I'm a developer, just tell me what's so cool about it. Like, I can't wait.
There was also a tinge, I will say, my tech pessimist of like, this is really cool stuff. That was like just a tinge of Black Mirror, maybe Grey Mirror on the edge of it, right? Okay, you have to let me have the, here's how you can relive your memories using Vision OS.
I love the Vision Pro. I love Vision OS. I think it's so cool. If only it was, you know, for a price for mere mortals, and I had an actual good excuse to have one, I would absolutely have one. I love this.
And if the hardware was actually, and the hardware was actually not. Was actually but, good, right?
Yeah, but again, like it will happen. Right? They've obviously committed. They've obviously committed to this platform. It's going to happen, whether you know, whatever. If we like it or not, it's going to happen.
I agreed, but I know that they are leaning in very heavily to you can watch stuff on planes, which was like one of the few good things people said about Vision OS. I did expect them to be like, hey, look, here I am in a kitchen setting timers over different pots, because again, practical application. And that, and the, I will admit, the like spatial virtual screen stuff, that's very cool, right? If I can go and sit and work in a cafe and have lots of screens, that's cool. But it was not, okay, back down to like human level tangible stuff, mirroring your iPhone to your Mac, right?
Yep.
These things. We should also mention, back on there, like the demo piece, they are masters at talking about a feature in use cases that no one's ever actually going to use it for, whilst not mentioning the use case that people are actually going to use. And my other favorite example of this is when I think it was Microsoft released Edge and the private browsing mode, and the advert was like a man that was like, oh, I'm going to propose to my girlfriend, so I better use private browsing on my personal laptop to look at engagement rings and for nothing else. We all know what they were doing with the locking the app and hiding the apps.
Yep.
It's like, guys, come on, we get it. All right, it's fine, but...
the internet is for porn music.
What a great musical that was.
Oh, it's amazing.
I'm now going to fall down an avenue. For those who don't know, Avenue Q, how would you describe it? The Muppets for adults,
yep.
With songs that at the time were like designed to be, ha ha ha, isn't this offensive? But actually, in hindsight, are quite offensive.
Yep. It's the best kind of humour.
I now have that song in my head.
Sorry. For the next hour and a half, it's just going to be the internet is for porn.
The internet is really, really great for porn.
For porn. What a mood for this episode.
What a mood. Oh dear.
How old is that song?
Almost 20 years.
Oh, goodness.
Probably. It must, like, I was doing it at college, and Avenue Q wasn't new then. Yeah, yeah. It was like mid 2000s. Let's not think about that. final things in WWDC. I guess my summary was, or would be, some like fluffy, showy things, like generating cartoons of founder. I mean, the stuff that I was like, yeah, okay, fine, creative, don't care. The customization stuff, really just neat and cool. But it was just this, like, here's some things that we're just doing that we know you've wanted for ages, but actually we're going to make them really good. And I think things like adding more widgets to your home screen, settings on dark mode, having the calculator app on the iPad and all like the maths stuff. Super cool, right?
I did love how they make fun of themselves with that one. And then I really expected it to be just that. And then when they brought out the notes app and being able to do calculations on there, and it's just like, okay, no, never mind. Like, I take it all back, Apple. You took it and you ran with it. Again.
And it's kind of quite complex math. It's not just like simple stuff either. I was like, okay, this is maybe the promise of where we want to be, and also them just killing off a whole bunch of third-party apps. I think listing, weren't we, going, this is dead.
Yep. Yep.
Again, they're not the first, but they do it the best.
As much as I'll always be pro-developer when it comes to this. You know, when it's Apple versus developers, always, always side with the developers. I know these developers are going to think of something else to do, which is going to be on top of the feature that Apple has taken, you know, to be as part of the OS itself. So in reality, I can't wait for them to figure out what's going to be that next thing.
Agreed. I just can't wait for the autumn now. The final thing, Apple are very good at this, which is doing things that are really quite cheesy and which make you kind of groan and you go, yes, okay, you're the best at this. Is that they've called their artificial intelligence capabilities. Side note, I enjoyed the little dig from Craig that was like, we've been using AI and machine learning for years.
Which they have.
Everyone says we're not doing it, which they have. It's true. Right? And they kind of announced a bunch of AI capabilities before they even came to the AI, and then they just called it Apple Intelligence. Which is AI.
I didn't even clock in on that until you said it to me. And then suddenly I'm like, you know, mind blown meme, right? I was just like, oh my goodness.
And then they said it and they went, Apple Intelligence, AI for everyone. And I have to admit, I was, again, talking about throwback, there was the oh no, you're just kind of playing back into the Apple of the 80s, Big Brother is watching, things are simple, make it super easy. Again, they are very, very good at this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Return to form, which again is what they're best at. This is the, in reality, what they're doing is, and I have a lot of problems with, you know, Steve Jobs' legacy, but really this is the positive side of his legacy, which is, this is the marketing spiel that you need to be saying, Apple, because these are the people that you're trying to make your most loyal customers. You're not trying to be for everyone, even though you keep on saying that, but let's be real, it's not everyone, but you have a subset of core fans that will do everything, anything, as long as you keep the facade of what is it that you're actually trying to achieve here. And it's great.
And I guess I'm now going to have to buy an iPhone 15. I've held off until this point, but
I'll keep holding on.
I'm going to, well, if you want Apple Intelligence, that's where it's going to be. But at least it'll be on the iPad and the Macs, because if you have M1.
Yes, which I do, and I'm very happy about that.
Yes.
But man, is that new iPad looking swell.
Oh, it really is.
Especially the more I delve into the animation side of things, the more I'm looking at my little iPad Air, and I'm just like, buddy, you're great, I love you, but just you need a little bit more, just a bit more. Apple have completely destroyed my tech stack ideas for the future and have made me reconsider everything and anything, because As weird as it sounds, and I know it sounds very weird, especially for someone who's quite into tech and not really, and I'm not a long, you know, I haven't been an Apple fangirl for many years, right? It's a relatively recent thing, mostly because over, you know, in the past, you know, in the past, they couldn't actually afford Apple stuff. But in reality, the reality of the world is that you have two options. You either bubblegum and duct tape everything together and you pick and choose everything carefully, or you pick a vendor and you go full on them. I do not trust Google. I have zero faith in them. I don't appreciate their approach of the short lifespan a lot of their products, even though that comes with the positives of they can try out different things and experiment and do crazy things, but you know, when it makes sense for them to do that. Apple seems to be going down the opposite route, which is, even though obviously it was because they got a slap on the wrist one too many times, they do tend to look at things in the longer term. And that to me gives me a lot of comfort in actually investing in the pieces of kit. There were a couple of comparisons from, again, you could always argue like how really agnostic these people are about like what's cheaper to run, especially as a business, even as an individual, what's cheaper to run long term. And Apple tends to win purely because of the longevity of the kit nowadays. That wasn't always the case. Again, they got many a slap on the wrists, but especially since the M1 chips came in, when they actually started using Apple Silicon, I think that is just now a completely different ballgame.
I think the thing that they're still not quite there in, but I'm interested to look at, is I think they're very, very close to cracking enterprise software as well. Because I speak as someone who came from that world, I think that the barrier to entry remains cost. And well, cost one, and UX two, because this is a pretty broad statement, but you look at most like corporate worlds, people are still used to the Windows ecosystem. They're not used to Mac. And yes, Mac is easier to use, but it's not if you've never used Mac. And there's a learning curve. And if you're somebody who just wants to turn up to work and do your job, and you're like, I have lived and breathed the Microsoft ecosystem, like that's just what you're used to. So it's very hard to pull people out of that. But again, I think we were talking about this last night, Mac for work, right? It just makes sense. And it's where, certainly if you, like for you, you know, certainly I think if you're setting up a business, if you're looking to look at your tech stack and go, actually, it just works, right? The Apple ecosystem, it just works. Stuff just flows.
It is not enterprise ready
yet. No. And again, like I say, a lot of that's cost. I think some of that's UX. But I also don't even think they're actually targeting that market. But if you're not in enterprise, again, but if I was now back in what I was doing 10 years ago, looking at the kind of software we were using, so much of it is going browser-based, I'd be looking at Chromebooks from a cost perspective. You just need to run Chrome. You just need to run Chrome. You don't need to run anything locally. It's, you know, I think my spicy take on that is like Chromebooks and browser-based software is just the sort of 21st century or like the 2024 version of terminal servers.
Yeah.
You know, you used to have terminals, thin clients. You now just run stuff in the cloud, right? And you don't need to run stuff locally. Yeah. But that's another
for the majority sometimes. For the majority of business stuff.
Yes.
Again, for media work, and again, that's where Apple have always been top of the market. That is where Apple lives. And again, just like another note for me on the WWDC event is just, I love how they just kept trying to shove in games, and I just kept on screaming, "Just stop it!" In my head, there is a very strong deviation line between Mac for work, Windows for gaming. That has always been the case, and I don't foresee them being able to catch, nor do I think they should. And I think that's always been my biggest pushback on this. It's like, just let them do what they're good at. Apple are fantastic as a work ecosystem, especially if you're in media or content creation or anything like that. Apple is your friend. If you want to be running any sort of, you know, game setup, Windows. That is how I'm, like, at home, that's what I have. Like, I have the gaming PC that is literally just a gaming machine. I do nothing else on it. I don't want to be involved in Microsoft's ecosystem. I don't want to be involved in, you know, even nowadays in Google's ecosystem. Work, you know, the Mac is where the work gets done. From that point, because again, it's simple, it's straightforward. I want there to be zero friction between me and the job I do.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that's not the case with Microsoft. Every single time I see Teams over like my partner's shoulder when he's working, I get goosebumps. It's like, keep it away from me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the song that makes you cry the most? The Teams ringtone. although I have the like dance version my Teams, because again, there was it's a while back now, but someone like remixed the Teams soundtrack, and then you could then it ended up being added, and Microsoft actually added it into Teams, and I'm like, okay, fine. It makes life. It's like having a rave. It's like, not answering the call because it's going to keep going. I'm not going to give you answering the call. Another hung up. Okay, it's over now.
And it's something I didn't know. If you
there you go.
Told me that when I was still at VMware, because that would have made my life a lot easier.
I'll record it and you can experience that. But it was a very 2020 and 2021. Kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we were all losing our minds in lockdowns. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. WWDC kind of provides quite a nice segue into what I want to talk about this week, which I guess, like, broadly, the headline is, why do we get the technology that was in sci-fi shows 60 years ago? Or, to put it another way, it feels like now you have tech and technology, and even we spoke in the last episode about wanting good Siri, and we referred to like Jarvis from Iron Man, and it seems like we are basing what we want to get our technology on what we thought technology would be before we had that technology. And it's just this, when you sort of step back and look at it, I go, this is a bit weird. Maybe it's just me, but I mean, it's a bit like it's not that these shows predicted this stuff. So let's take a tangible example. In Thunderbirds, great 60s TV show, they have a thing, and this is actually, it's not even their original idea, like it exists in the George Orwell novel 1984 and probably goes back further than that. This idea of telescreens, which are screens which are two-way, where you can talk to somebody on a screen and you see their picture. It's kind of like a logical, oh, well, we go from having telephones to telescreens, and now we have it. And everyone goes, oh, they predicted Zoom. And it's like, no, they didn't predict Zoom. We built Zoom because that's what we thought we wanted to have. And I don't know. I just think, are we going to forever have future technical innovation be determined by what we thought, or where we thought technology would be? And I have a lot of examples that we can talk through.
Yep. My take on this is that it's a two-way street, like with a lot of these things. Sci-fi authors tend to be people who are actually really into the topics that they explore in their fictional writing. They either have been familiar, if you look back at like the biography of a lot of the sci-fi authors, they either are physicists accidentally or have been known to be around scientists and physicists. So a lot of their novel ideas or crazy things that they put out there, it's just they're taking technology that they have been introduced to and have just pushed it to the logical end of that. Like, what is the most possible thing we could do? What is the most extreme thing we can do? And that's the one-way street. The two-way street comes in when then bright, smart, ambitious people look at these things and go like, let me give that a go. And it's in reality, like, again, we need to seek inspiration from somewhere when we're developing things, you know, when new technology comes through. And the easiest thing to pinpoint is things that we've watched growing up, or something that we've sort of have in our sphere of influence to go like, ooh, that's actually, again, it's not about like, and a lot of these things have taken many, many years of iterations to actually get to this point. So that's why, like, I find it strange as well when people say, like, oh, this predicted the future. It's like, I don't think you know what the technology was back then, or just because it wasn't in your hands doesn't mean people weren't already working on that in one way or another.
It's, I think, also maybe just that sort of aspirational thing. And the other one I always come back to is, I will not attempt to butcher the French name of the film, but essentially it's Men in the Moon, very early cinema. And it's like, we go and land on the moon, and all of a sudden, oh no, we land on the moon. Like 60 years later, right? I think it kind of, I always find that the slightly unsettling thing is when you go, oh, there was less time between that film coming out and the moon landing happening than there is between the moon landing and now, or we're very close to that like crossover point. But it's, I think you're right in the sense of we are drawn with it's the influence that we have in childhood and in early, you know, in those early stages. We go, oh, that's what we want to get to. But I also feel like we have a tendency to forget how these things played out, and that it's not always a good thing. And like the one that my perpetual thing, and I think at the risk of this becoming just like Paul talks about Futurama constantly, genuinely though, there are so many things in the early series in particular, and you still sort of get it a little bit in later series, things like the iPhone, which is a device that you put behind your eye and then it projects out. And it's like, oh, but it that sort of felt like they were kind of playing a bit of catch up. But it's going on the internet wearing what essentially looked like Apple Vision Pros to then be bombarded with ads. And I just think, yeah, like we're in this state where we're now, we've always sort of chased this vision of like virtual reality. But also pop culture said, yeah, but if you do that, here's the bad stuff. And we've gone, no, because it'll be fine. Because we won't do
that's
that.
That's the logical conclusion, right? And again, that's what sci-fi authors, like the Futurama like writers, that's what they did. They pushed it to the logical conclusion of that theory. But I'll give you an example, actually, of that. Because it hasn't happened yet, both in Apple and, you know, the Meta Quests, like headsets or anything like that. And then that's why I had such a visceral reaction when Ubisoft came on the stage on WWDC. AAA, like, you know, video games costing $80, we're gonna shove ads in them.
Say, yep.
No! How about you off? No. I know this is a mini ability tangent here, but this aligns with that logical push, and they will push it until that point. And then some more. Because as long as there's money to be made, that is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you, Paul, to a certain degree of like, there is a pessimistic view on this. And this is where I get really frustrated, because especially when it comes to like marketing and advertising and like pushing people in a direction where you don't, because like, I have nothing against advertising if it's good and I haven't paid for it to get removed. Because if something is free, you're paying with your attention. If something is paid for, you're paying with your money. You can't have both. Well, obviously you can.
And I think actually AAA games are my favourite example of the decline in quality and quantity of what you get. It's the ultimate shrinkflation. So people always talk about shrinkflation, which is the chocolate bars are not the size they used to be, but they cost more. That is so crystal clear in games, and I think we crossed that Rubicon, I would say, around like 2010, 2012, when we went from the generation of consoles, which was the PS3, to the PS4. The PS3, you could still buy games for £30-40, which was, you know, you would save up and you'd go and you'd buy a game, and you would have 10, 12, 15 hours worth of offline single player content that you could play. You didn't need any DLC, no downloads, nothing. You'd buy the game and you'd have it and you'd own it physically. Now, you go and you might buy a disc, or more often you just go and buy it from the store. So you don't even own the game, because like, I lost a bunch of games. I stopped paying for PlayStation Plus. Oh no, all these games that you thought you had owned, no, they were just loaned to you. Also, we're going to decide that these games are no longer available to you because we're going to take it off of the store for this console, and you just think, like, no one owns it anymore. And as you say, but the cost goes up still. The cost goes up of the actual owning the actual game, and then you're then buying more and more stuff. And expansion packs have been a thing for a long time in PC games. But you would kind of have a full game, and then you buy a bit more, right? You'd go, oh, I'm actually buying some extra stuff. It now feels like, rather than buying the game and then getting the extras, you get, like, the little extra bit at the start. You get, like, the demo. Oh, no, if you want the game, you have to pay for it. It's not about, and there's always been a thing I remember from years ago, I think it's actually the comedian Dara Brian saying it, that what he didn't like about video games, and he used the example of Gears of War, is that if you can't beat a boss, the game is like, no, you are not allowed to play the rest of this game because you're not good enough. And it's like the only narrative media that restricts you from moving forwards. Right? A book doesn't stop you at page 10 and go, did you understand this first chapter? If not, you can't read anymore. Games do that. But now, like, no. Oh, no. You've beaten the boss. Okay, give us some more money, and then you can... And watch this ad. And then you can play the next, like, 20% of the game, and then we'll charge some more money, and then we'll charge some more money.
Yep. No, so somebody gave the idea that instead you can... Why charge for a game once when you can charge five times?
I don't know. And maybe there's the kind of, oh well, this is the world that we're in now, and there's that maybe we're just not gonna take any lessons from maybe what, as you say, what, like, sci-fi writers are trying to tell us, and maybe they're like, hey, this thing go bad. And, you know, again, you see the launch of these Tesla robots, and I went, oh, so that's like the Lucy Lubot, which was also, again, Futurama reference, right? But that was about piracy and this idea of stealing an image. But now companies just like, yeah, we steal images. We steal your stuff. We'll use your stuff. Who cares? Because we have all the money and you don't.
And then we'll make you pay for it, for you to get a regurgitated version of it back.
Yes, yeah. And then what we'll do is we'll gurge it up and sell it to you again. And I'm just going, this is the thing. And I have to, and again, kind of coming back to WWDC, I had this, like, pendulating reaction to it. On the one hand, I was like, this stuff is so cool. Also, fuck off with the generative AI. Because I don't want that.
I love your description of pendulums, because I think literally the messages, it is. There is me saying, yes, and then the next message is, no!
Yeah, absolutely. It's this... I'm like,
it's the yes, 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 no, 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 no. Like, that's literally it.
And I'm kind of just going, we're still, and I think, and I was pretty naive to hope this, I was like, do it good and do it helpful. And you've done all of that, but you also just shove, again, kind of classic Apple thing, shove in a bunch of stuff that no one really wants, or that's actually of any, well, that's of any kind of, like, that's not useful beyond the novelty.
Well, this is where I'm a bit worried with these generative stuff, because I do think people use them a lot. I use them for moral reasons. But in reality, I think the reason why it is being pushed so much is because people do actually want them. And again, I'll be curious to see the pushback, especially Apple gets, because again, OpenAI got a lot of the backlash from creatives on the topic of, well, where are you getting your data from? How are you teaching these models? What are you basing it on? And that was exactly the question I had during WWDC, which is, Apple, I see your cute little emoticons, right? I get where the emoticons are coming from.
Genmojis, the Genmoji feature.
Yeah, the Genmojis, I see them, I'm fine with them. But this image of a cute altar that you have there, where did that come from? Who drew that altar? Because it wasn't the bottle. The model is just regurgitating things. So, Apple, fess up, where did you get that from? Because I don't think the answer is going to be nice. The answer is going to be, you know, DeviantArt. It's going to be the open internet where artists are putting their stuff through. And suddenly it's like, oh, great, thanks.
Again, come full circle. And I promise that for this episode, the final Futurama reference, but there'll be more. Second episode of the first series, they go to the moon. And what's happened? We colonised the moon, and what we've done? We stuck a theme park on it. And I have if I tell you that I wrote several thousand words on theme parks and why they are just this encapsulate to that thing of regurgitation of taking well-known nostalgic imagery, swallowing it up and kind of regurgitating a bad version of it, but in such a way that people go, oh, this feels familiar and cozy, to make money. And it always comes back to that. And I am just, I guess, struggling, and maybe help me, Lidori. I want to be more excited about this stuff, but there's just that bit of my brain that's just going, this might just edge out. It might just edge out. It might just be the, is this the start of, you know, just creeping into more worrying areas? I'll put it that way.
Do you want reassurance from me? I'm really sorry, buddy. Capitalism rules. And if there's money to be made, there is money to be made. And there's only so much markets that you can have, right? And I think, again, we touched on Apple, we touched on gaming, we touched on so many aspects, and that's exactly what's happened. The markets are ending. There is no more growth to be had. So what happens is that these companies start eating each other up until there's one, you know, mega company overlord at the end of the day. And then you have to, Disney's a perfect example, right? You know, theme parks and this and that and buying up studios and doing this. And again, they're out of market. So what do? They keep on regurgitating and keep on feeding you the same stuff over and over and over again, trying to resaturate the pre-existing market. And it's, and apologies, Tim, if you're listening, if I sound a little negative about this, but really there's no fighting it unless the system changes in one way or another, and it won't, right? So let's be realistic, it won't. So what do we, and I'm going to try to pull us back a little bit from this topic, because there is no good ending to this. The solution to this, for us to continue doing what we do, is to be practical, which is, what can you and I do in our day-to-day that is going to make our lives better whilst this is happening in the background? And really, the only conclusion that I have reached to in my own life, which is, support indie, right? Find things you enjoy, vote with your money, put your money there, and don't feel guilty for enjoying, if you want to go to Disneyland. That's completely up to you. I'm not saying that you're obviously criticizing that, Paul. But again, Tim, go ahead, have your Mickey Mouse donut whilst wearing your Mickey Mouse hat and your Mickey Mouse shirts and your Mickey Mouse underwear. That's fine. Right? That's absolutely fine. Indulge in that. But just be aware what is the price you're paying when you're indulging in these things. And that's the only thing, right? We have the same with Apple, right? Like, I am feeding the behemoth that is Apple by buying their stuff. There is a benefit to me from that. And I take the price that comes with that. And that is it.
The one thing we haven't talked about, actually, well, actually, first of all, so just like all good 70s sci-fi movies, there's a bleak ending to this, and we can't escape it. I think you could kind of take that kind of quite nihilistic approach to things, but I like that your positive spin. But what I was actually kind of coming to as well, and what you remind me of, the one thing we haven't, to bring it back to WWDC, that I thought was really well done, and actually I was like, how are they going to tackle privacy? Because Apple's big thing is privacy, and I think most people will remember the story five, six, seven years ago. Time is weird, right? I think we all know that it's hard to tell. But the story about the terrorist's phone that Apple refused to create a back door for. So just in case anybody, very quick privacy, and we'll link in the show notes to this. There was a shooting in the US, and they recovered the iPhone of one of the shooters, but Apple refused to create a quote-unquote backdoor, essentially a way to crack the passcode, because they went, if we do this, there is no way to go back from this, and it will compromise our privacy. And one of the good things I took away from it was, I was like, oh no, they're doing this on device, this AI, and they kind of said, yeah, we'll call out the cloud, but they're running in Apple servers. I was like, oh no, they've done it. They have done they are committing to the privacy, like, promise. And I think what that reminded me of, and we have touched on this before, is this idea that the internet's kind of getting smaller again. in that the internet started out, it got like the Big Bang, right? It got really big, and it went really, 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 really big. And then we've kind of reached a point now where it's just starting to contract in, and where you had like big hundreds of friends, social networks, we're now just coming in, and actually the internet is about that WhatsApp chat with two other friends, or that group of people that you stay in touch with, or the calls that you have read. And I think it's like, oh no, actually, we're just seeing that like some contraction of people's internet and doing things like going and finding a dedicated platform to read the internet on, not looking at all these websites. So it's just that thing. And I was like, okay, that, so I think that will be, I'm interested to see where that goes, because it feels like we've gone out and we're now coming back in and talking about bad things Google have done, summarizing searches with AI. That's going to force the internet to contract and become wholly more private, not just in people are having to go and find, you're having to go and find content more. It's not being served up to you organically, which naturally means that your internet becomes smaller. You're not getting your news from anywhere. You're kind of getting it from the sources that you know and you're going and finding. And I think that is just forcing this contraction of the internet experience, and seeing how Apple are leaning on privacy and personalization and customization and localization, doing stuff on device. They're going, this isn't so much about it being an internet-enabled device anymore, but it's about being a personal device that you are able to use and work from and will help organize your life, but it's not about connecting to the internet anymore. That I feel like has gone away or is going away.
And I'll be honest with you, I think that's really the fighting back, right? We are seeing people, and I'm not talking about Apple right here, right? What you're talking about, like the internet contracting again, I think this is the natural human thing we do, which is, we don't like this big thing, let's make it smaller, right? And I'm really hopeful about that. And I'll be honest with you, I'm absolutely gonna use this conversation as an opportunity to shoehorn some networking in. I really believe there is a push and a movement, and it's really interesting because applications drive infrastructure, and then infrastructure drives applications. And all of the, you know, in my head, all of these, you know, all of the AI stuff, all of the features and functions that we're talking about today are applications. And that's what I mean in that context. I really see a push from the infrastructure side of things towards that private. And I think I mentioned in previous episodes as well, of like private data centers again, private AIs, something that is different, and it's not something that you share with other people. Because I think especially enterprises, because us as mere consumers, we can't really change much. But these bigger companies, the actual enterprises, they're the ones pushing for change that is away from shoving everything into AWS or Azure or Google Cloud. Okay, no, actually, never mind. We need something that we have full control over, something that we have a full, that actually, like, we just don't share with other people. Because that's where, again, you're paying with security for ease, but then also it's not as easy. But then also they start being a lot more expensive than they were before. So in reality, you're paying security and you're gaining very little in return. So I'm seeing this push right now, and just how, again, I'm seeing it from the vendor side, because those are the most marketing thing that sort of I see in my day to day. But vendors are pushing more and more towards, oh, we're not selling to cloud providers anymore, or we're not pushing our own customers to think about, oh, this is just going to be now a device, like the one device that you have on site, and everything else is going to be on cloud. It's like, oh no, actually, buy all of this physical kit to keep in-house for your own self, that is completely isolated, to empower you to do all of the app stuff, all of the AI stuff that you want to do. And again, by the way, IT and they just technology as a whole is not even a spiral, it's a circle. We keep on reinventing the wheel, and we keep on seeing like, oh yeah, no, there was a reason why we stopped using shared resources and went private. And then in a couple years time, it's going to be like, oh, but how about, have you seen this idea of shared resources? And it'll be like, oh, there we go again. But that's good. That's the natural cycle of these things. And I think it's very important And I think this is where, you know, we tend to talk more about, like, you know, how do technological companies look at these things? We as consumers also need to be a little bit aware of this so we don't get trapped or we don't get sort of surprised as companies pull away or, you know, pull the plug on different things, because of course they will. This is the natural order of things. These are how things are going to move along. So I think it's very important as we are, and especially as technologists, right, as people who are really into this stuff, and especially as we're presenting this to customers and you know, talking and prospects and talking people through decisions they need to make for their enterprise, I think it's really important to consider that circular motion of technology as we're moving through innovations. And by the way, I'm a little bit facetious, but in reality, it is a very, just a very tight spiral. It's a very tight, which again, you just need to be very keenly aware that whilst yes, we are getting improvements, look back 8-10 years and you see practically that they can easily recycle, like, again, companies can recycle marketing materials from 8-10 years ago and use it again by slapping in a new keyword that is now the new buzzword, and they keep on churning and churning and churning and reinventing themselves again and again and again. But yeah, I think it's just, it's an interesting thought, and it's, you know, in the whole context of, we keep on, like, you know, we're seeing things that have before been sci-fi, and we're seeing things that, you know, and how do we approach them, and what's the goal, and we keep, you know, what is our goal really with a lot of this tech? I think considering that nothing is really new is really important.
I agree that we're going to see this shift towards privacy. Now, on a consumer level, I think examples I always point to are, you know, what happened with Twitter, right? This thing that so many people built a platform on Twitter and now it's kind of gone away. Saw just this last week, big LinkedIn creators who almost lost their entire audience because they tried to change their email address and then their account got blocked. And all of a sudden, everything is gone. And when you put that at a company level, I think, you see, from a creator level, you're seeing people moving towards things like Substack, and we talked about cultivating audiences, and the value of a much smaller but dedicated audience over a massive but not engaged audience, right? You could have 100,000 followers on a social platform, but if they're not really engaged with you, there's no value. Or you could have 1,000 people that subscribe to your newsletter, and they are far more valuable to you as a creative than having 100,000 people on a social network, because it's much, much more fleeting. I think one thing you've tapped into is my existential dread around Google Photos and the fact that I have so many photos in there that are, you know, like, that I would be devastated if I lost them, but I don't have it. And Google could pull the plug on that anytime, or it could go down, right? These things could be lost. I don't own them. And I think it's why I am now like, I need to get a private NAS server, because I want to feel some... You can argue, right, everything... If you push it to the nth degree, okay, even physical media is finite, because it could... Because the promise of digital is it's safe from a fire.
I'm not saying that, right? And I'm not pushing that, because when you are thinking about infrastructure setup, it's always about the level of risk versus backups, right? So if you are concerned about your Google, have a regular monthly backup at home, again, if they are valuable enough to you for you to do that, or have Photos and Apple Photos at the same time, right? So two separate entities backing up your photos. And then occasionally, and that's something that I do, I actually print out all of my most valuable ones and I keep them actually as physical objects. So it's just about the level of, like, how valuable those things are versus how many backups you want. And by the way, again, this is not something crazy, and people do this, right? So please, Paul, do that.
I will. Okay, so, and I think what I do that, and I think it's this, where I guess I'm pushing it, is that you can, if you engage in, you know, the kind of the like, pushing this to the, like, its most absurd idea, okay, you can say, well, you can take a digital download on your own hard drive, Well, that might fail. You can print off a copy. Well, that might get lost in a fire or a flood. Right. And
they won't at the same time.
No.
That's the key thing.
I know. And agreed. And I think, but I guess I say, this is the thing that it's kind of, it's a perpetual reminder that of this and where I'm now, where my head is now going. And this is not for this conversation, but is I'm going to set you some more homework, and I'm going to set everyone, Tim, Tom, here's some homework. Go and read. It's pretty short, 160 odd pages. A book by Jean Baudrillard called Simulacra and Simulation, which goes into a lot of the stuff we're sort of talking about. And I think it would be really good for us to kind of, we could get into in a future episode,
mm-hmm.
particularly as it relates to this idea of technology, reality, simulated reality, platforms, etc. Lots of stuff in there. But there's a dread, right? That you're kind of losing the physicality of things, and it's why I'm still very attached to things like physical books, physical media, because it feels like I have a backup, because I have a copy of it. The platform death again is where you experience it on a personal level, right? There are people I have lost connection with because the platforms that I use to connect with them are gone. Or maybe they're not gone, but some of them are gone, but some of them I just don't use anymore. Again, I've cited it before, but it's the end of The Sims Online, right? It's very good, short episode of a podcast which looks at this end of this virtual space. Again, this is a topic for another time, but I think there's an interesting piece there about this sort of idea of everything being finite, and actually by bringing everything locally down, you go, well, that is you're right, it's a reaction to that intangibility and the fragility of what online spaces have become. I think on an enterprise level, though, where thinking more practically about it, I don't know if we're going to necessarily see how many companies are going to push back towards physically owning like the actual hardware. I feel like that desire to do that is being broken. And there's sustainability arguments around that as well, right? It's less sustainable for everyone to run their own data centers. However, if you look at what Apple are doing by having their own private data centers that they're running, you'll have companies of a size. And I think private cloud is that thing of being able to say, yeah, maybe you're outsourcing the ownership of the actual hardware to somebody, but you're not sharing that. It's not a multi-tenant. You're not sharing that with other people. Now, there's always going to be room for those kinds of cloud platforms, and I think we're talking about different use cases, and I think that there's this sort of the flow of motion in enterprise technology goes one way very slowly and then comes back the other way very slowly, and we could be completely wrong, but I think there's going to be a dividing line between the companies that push, that continue to go on this journey of secure SaaS solutions, right, browser-based, and there will be a vertical market of solutions that is fine to do. There will be some which say, yes, I'll take your SaaS solution that you're hosting in third party, but I want single tenant.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be some that say, I'm going to put your solution into my private cloud, mm-hmm. because that is from a cost and sustainability standpoint, it still makes the best decision. And again, there are always going to be situations, security, certain applications, where just staying essentially classically on-premise, as you say, the spiral will come back around to that. And it's this thing of like, as I say, we've gone, the spiral has kind of gone all the way up to this really big, wide internet. And now we're coming slowly all the way back down to something much more of a walled garden and much more of a, this is what I'm going to let into my walled garden.
And cue us again in 5 to 10 years, and it will be a big internet again. Then round and round and round we go.
And round and round we go. But it will be slightly different. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see.
Of course, yeah. Like. Okay, spiral, not circle. I'm correcting myself. It's very tight spiral. Very almost tight a circle, spiral. But very tight. Do you want to... So, Paul, tell me about your childhood.
Pull up the couch, right? Therapy session. AI therapy. This is going to become a regular feature because I feel like, you know, We put off talking about AI for a while.
And then that's the only thing we talk about.
Then we finally talked about AI, and now we just talk about it, and then Apple have done it, and it's like, well, obviously we're talking about AI. But AI, there was a story this week, which is one of those things, has turned into a breaking news story. So when I was writing the full disclosure, you know, we prepare for these. We haven't always prepared for these, but hopefully you'll notice that we now do some prep for these. I was going through news in the last week, and there was a big backlash against Adobe. Lots of reasons to have backlash against Adobe. And full disclosure, as someone who used their software for many, many years, but about a year or so ago, went, why am I paying monthly for something that I'm using ad hoc? And so chucked out Lightroom and Photoshop. And I went, well, hey, Canva exists, and there's also other solutions like Darktable. Great Lightroom alternative. I was like, I don't need, why am I paying, you know, a subscription for this thing I'm not really using? And that, again, is a kind of another whole thing to get into. But they put out some new terms of service, which basically said that if you put content into their Creative Cloud solution, that they owned it. And they basically said, we're going to be allowed to use this to train AI.
Mm-hmm.
And surprise, surprise, there was a bit of a backlash against that.
What a thought.
And it's this, I mean, I'll tell you one thing. People are reading terms of service now.
Oh, yeah.
For a long time, the joke, like, you install iTunes, get me the terms of service. And I can't remember which show it is, but there's like a thing about accepting the iTunes terms of service, and then someone from Apple turns up and punches you in the face and says, hey, you said yes to the terms. Because there was a point when you could literally put that stuff in and no one would read it.
Yep.
And I think it's inherently a good thing. People are now reading these. People are going, oh, actually, I'm not going to like blindly accept your terms. But there's been a clarification issued. I'm gonna read this. Okay.
Oh, God.
We have never trained generative AI on our customers' content. We have never taken ownership of a customer's work. And we have never allowed access to customer content beyond what's legally required.
Mm.
Make of that what you will.
Yeah, but if you put it in the term of service, doesn't it become legally required?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yes. I'll link to the articles that talk about it more. But they're doing the bad thing out loud now. They're not even trying to hide it. And it's kind of like, it's almost like there was this backlash against OpenAI for training on the open internet and YouTube, which clearly has been trained on, and going, oh, it's fair use. And again, we should note there are active lawsuits going on around this, so we kind of need to not speculate too much. But the fact that Adobe, it feels like Adobe have kind of gone, oh, no, we're going to do that, but that's just what we do now. Or it's kind of what we've always done. And people are going, no, hang on a minute. No, that's... No, actually, no. I don't like that idea. And it's just this thing of... We've talked about open platforms, and I kind of miss the days when you could naively throw up hundreds of thousands of photos on platforms like Flickr and DeviantArt and go, hey, everybody, just have my art. And everyone was like, thank you.
Yeah, that's gone. That's dead. I think you're right. I think there's definitely a much more educated approach that consumers are having. Again, not everyone. Not saying everyone, but it's definitely a movement in the right direction of, I don't think we're okay with this anymore. We need to start considering what exactly are these big companies doing with our stuff. I mean, then you have the negative example of, you know, nothing ever came out of Snowden. But then again, definitely not a topic to start at the end of the episode. But again, there does seem to be pockets of people that are looking into these things and start asking the right questions, which is, again, and even then, even yesterday, watching the keynote, where do you get this from? How do you use this? Who have you, like, again, but I think the biggest challenge we're going to keep on facing with a lot of these generative tools is there is nothing stopping them right now. Legislation is always going to be a little bit behind. And do we want legislation to be putting their foot in this? Do we not? I think only time will tell.